use this data to help improve on their performance?
Well, first of all, we hope that these results will spur other districts locally and across the state and across the nation to examine patterns of suspension and expulsion for English learners, and also examine the achievement correlates of suspension and expulsion for those students. Now, more specifically as to how districts can respond to the results, they can search for alternatives to suspending or expelling students. They can examine policies and procedures for disciplining students and identify how these policies and procedures might disadvantage English learners. They can monitor the learning environments in their schools and classrooms to ensure that they support all students. They can provide suspended or expelled English learners with appropriate learning activities if they're ever excluded from their classrooms. And finally, they can provide academic and behavioral support to English learners who return to school after having been suspended or expelled. The last thing I think I would like to add is that we're hoping that districts that examine patterns of suspension and expulsion for English learners will also look at the reasons why these penalties were imposed, and they should be alert to patterns that show that English learners are disciplined more often than English learners for offenses that are identified through administrators' discretion. If this happens, it may signal a need for additional training for school staff members in understanding and responding to students' behaviors.
I've been speaking with Art Burke. He's written a report for Education Northwest on discipline and achievement among English learning students and Oregon schools. Mr. Burke, thank you so very much for your time.
Thank you, Doug. I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk with you.
This is Doug McVeigh with KBOO News.
Louisiana Governor Bobby Jindal has ended the state's Medicaid contract with Planned Parenthood. This comes after an anti-abortion group released edited videos accusing the organization of illegally selling fetal tissue. After September, the Louisiana Department of Public Health and hospitals will no longer pay for low-income women insured through Medicaid to receive care at Planned Parenthood clinics. Governor Jindal said in a statement that the organization was in violation of Louisiana law that bans government funds from being used to perform or recommend abortions. However, there are currently only two Planned Parenthood clinics in the state, neither of which provide abortions. Last year, the two Louisiana clinics provided over 15,000 healthcare visits. A third clinic is currently under construction in New Orleans that will provide abortions, but Planned Parenthood says the clinic will not participate in tissue donation. This weekend, an unidentified person poured gasoline on the newly laid foundation at the New Orleans Planned Parenthood site and set fire to a security guard's car.
Since the end of May, 18 whales have been found dead in waters off Kodiak Island in Alaska. 10 fin whales and 8 humpback whales have been found so far. There are still few clues as to the cause or causes of death. Kate Wynn, a marine mammal specialist for the University of Alaska Sea Grant Program, said that an environmental toxin is the leading hypothesis as the cause, even though tests were negative for one toxin associated with harmful algal blooms. Results are pending for tests for other toxins. A muscle tissue sample is being tested for the possibility of radionuclides from the 2011 Fukushima nuclear disaster. Scientists have also looked at other possibilities, including sonar and seismic exploration. Wynn said, "The carcasses unfortunately are getting older and less sampleable, so we never will find out what killed those whales in my mind."
The campaigns have begun in Canada's national elections. Prime Minister Stephen Harper dissolved Parliament on Sunday, kicking off the longest election campaign season in Canada since 1872. The Canadian government is currently in the hands of the Conservative Party. It's no surprise that the Conservatives are Canada's mainstream right-wing party, while the Liberal Party is moderately left, and the New Democratic Party is essentially centrist. Polls released today give the new Democratic Party a narrow lead, with just over 33% of the projected vote, compared to the Conservatives with just under 31% and the Liberal Party with just over 25%. It is early, however, and political pollsters in Canada do not have a very good track record. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is a major issue in the Canadian election. The NDP is strongly in favor of the trade deal. NDP leader Tom Mulcair has dismissed Conservative Prime Minister Harper's negotiating efforts, calling him weak and vulnerable. Canadians will go to the polls on October 19th of this year.
The Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Milwaukee says that it will pay $21 million to more than 300 victims of clergy abuse. The settlement would end the four-year bankruptcy proceeding that the Archdiocese filed to address liabilities created by sexual abuse lawsuits. It would protect all of the Archdiocese's parishes, schools, and institutions from future lawsuits related to abuse. The deal mandates that 330 abuse survivors will share the settlement money. In addition, a $500,000 therapy fund will be established for survivors to receive counseling for as long as they need. However, some people will get no money from the deal. 157 claims are being disregarded either because they were not for sexual abuse, did not name the abuser, or a financial settlement had already been paid, according to the Archdiocese. Attorney Jeff Anderson is representing people with bankruptcy claims. Anderson says that the treatment of the survivors by the Archdiocese of Milwaukee has been harsh and hurtful. This process has been heartbreaking for many who have been treated so unfairly by hardball legal tactics. The survivors continued to stand up for what was right, what they believed in, and to make sure the truth was brought to light.
After a six-month investigation by the watchdog group Air Wars, it was reported today that over 120 airstrikes in the U.S.-led coalition fight against ISIS, or the Islamic State, are cause for concern with regards to civilian casualties. The number is about three times greater than the coalition itself had acknowledged and 12 times more than it has investigated. The evaluation by Air Wars has been conducted from February to the present and includes an extensive database of hundreds of photographs and videos. It names about 260 victims explicitly, though evidence suggests many more who have not been identified. The coalition, dominated by the United States, has thus far launched roughly 5,800 airstrikes in Syria and Iraq, involving the use of 18,000 bombs and missiles or more. The coalition has boasted that its air war against ISIS is, quote, the most precise and disciplined in the history of aerial warfare. However, there is a disturbing lack of transparency in its actions, with only Canada consistently reporting when and where its aircraft strike. Other states involved in the coalition defend their secrecy by claiming that the information could be used by ISIS to disrupt its operations and avoid its attacks. But Air Wars has reported, with supporting evidence from local healthcare institutions and government and private documentation, that in the past 2 years, well over 1,000 civilian casualties have been inflicted by the bombing campaign. Monitoring groups in the region generally accept that the coalition attempts to limit civilian casualties, whether their motivations are humanitarian or political. However, they also admit that the manner in which the air war is prosecuted necessarily puts civilians at high risk. Air Wars analysis suggests that July 2015 has been the most intensive month to date of coalition bombings, with 14 new events where civilians were likely put at risk and many probably killed. Overall, the picture suggests that even the most modern precision munitions and tactics cannot prevent the dangers an air war presents to innocent civilians.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Tuesday, August 4th, 2015. Israel's army demolished Palestinian-owned structures and invade parts of Gaza, attacking residents. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Israeli occupation bulldozers on Tuesday morning tore down three homes in Dahmash town near occupied Ramle under the pretext of building without permit. The homes are the property of the Assaf family and were demolished on April 15th earlier this year, but were rebuilt by the village and the popular committees. The people currently living in Dahmash were originally displaced from their homes in 1948 and took the neighborhood to be their home, refusing to leave Palestine. In related news, Israeli soldiers invaded Cheshem ad-Daraj, a Bedouin community east of Yatta town, south of the southernmost bank city of Hebron, and demolished a residential shed and a barn. There are around 1,200 Palestinians living in the village of Cheshem ad-Daraj, lacking basic infrastructure and subjected to repeated assaults and violations by Israeli soldiers and fanatic illegal settlers. Moreover, Israeli soldiers invaded Beit Kahel village near Hebron and demolished an agricultural shed, allegedly for being installed without a construction permit. The demolished shed is a 16 square meter used for storing agricultural supplies and as a dwelling, especially in the summertime. In Gaza on Tuesday, several armored Israeli military vehicles and bulldozers invaded Palestinian agricultural lands northwest of Khan Yunis in the southern part of the Gaza Strip and opened fire at random while army helicopters flew overhead. The army conducts daily invasions against the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip, mainly in areas close to the border fence, in addition to ongoing attacks against Gaza fishers in Palestinian territorial waters. In other news, two Palestinian political detainees held by the Israeli army have been on hunger strike for almost 8 days in protest of administrative detention and medical negligence, according to the Palestinian Prisoner Society, PPS. Medical negligence has been widely reported as a systematic policy by the Israeli prison service. Under administrative detention, Palestinian political prisoners are held without charges or trial and for indefinite and renewable periods of time.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Nathan Behensky, Shade Samuelson, Doug McVeigh, Cliff Verla, Connie Kazanowski, Nicholas Thomas, and Jim Thompson. Our engineer is Sequoia Wright, and the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Nicole Weinstock.
And I'm Doug McVeigh. Coming up on Wednesday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Paul Rowland hosts Wednesday Talk Radio. At 9, Political Perspectives features two talks from the recent annual meeting of Oregonians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty, with activist Mike Farrell, best known as Captain B.J. Honeycutt in the popular 1970s TV series MASH, and Becky O'Neill McBrayer, an Oregon resident who lost her mother and stepfather to murder. At 10, Air Cascadia is off today. We'll hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, it's the KBOO Bike Show, bringing you news and views of cycling in Portland and beyond. Thanks for listening to KBOO, and thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
And stay tuned for Preference at 6.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Aurora Colony Vineyard's 2015 Jazz Festival, August 9th, with doors opening at 2 p.m. and performances from 3 to 9 p.m. The Aurora Colony Vineyards is located at 21338 Oak Lane Northeast in Aurora, Oregon. Performers include Tony Lincoln, the Ron Steen Band, Picante Latin Jazz, Tom Grant, and many more. Again, that's the Aurora Colony Vineyards Jazz Festival, August 9th, from 2 to 9 p.m. More information about directions and ticket prices can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or radiocab.com.